PHP Radio
on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network,
your number one source for all things golf.
Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.
And welcome back, my friends, to another episode of Off Course. I'm your host, Dan Edwards. You can find me on Twitter at CanadanGolf. And with me today from Bridgestone Golf, aka at Bridgestone Golf, is the main man, Elliot Mello. You can find him on social at Mello Golf, or the big one, Bridgestone Golf. Elliot, how are you, my friend?
I am excited to be on, man. How you been?
I've been doing well. Hey, the weather's turning here in Ohio. The grass is actually greening, which is a huge deal. I have rounds in play already, and at this point, life couldn't get better. Are you playing?
Been playing a lot. Been playing a lot down here in Georgia. Weather's been great. Got my third tournament of the month coming up on Sunday, so excited to get back out there. Last couple outings have been less than stellar, but at least it's good to be on the course.
You're going big then. That's tournament golf. You are rearing to go for 2021.
Yeah, my club, with the pandemic and golf surging, my club has transferred to, you have to be a member of the MGA, the Men's Golf Association, to do tournaments. So I went big and joined the MGA, and now they email me three times a day, it seems like, inviting me to these things. So they're keeping me busy.
That's awesome. How many runs do you think you'll get in this year?
I'll probably end up in the 35 range, would be my guess, 30, 35.
Okay.
Would be my assumption. At some point during the summer, it gets a little too warm to play in Georgia. So it's kind of a hot and heavy out of the gate in spring, and then comes back in the fall.
Yeah. So unfortunately, you're not going to win the total record count, because I did have J-Man on from THP, and that dude plays like 6,000 times a year. So it's hard to keep up with him.
That's my guy. We love that kind of golfer.
But I'll tell you what, 35 is pretty competitive from an industry perspective. You guys don't play enough, I don't think.
Yeah, I would say that traditionally my numbers were much lower, quite honestly. But now I'm living in a golf community, and my neighbors keep begging me to come out, and a little bit different dynamic for me right now. So I've been playing more frequently.
Have they all been B-fit?
They've all been fit in numerous ways. So I would say Bridgestone sails at Harbor Club in Georgia, out index most courses.
Awesome. Hey, I don't know if you know, but do you actually remember the first time we met? I'm assuming no.
I can't say I do. I know there's a story coming, though.
Well, yeah, I'm going to stump you, because I remember doing this in 2013. I did an online fit with Mellow Man from Bridgestone. You fit me into a B330. That was August 7th of 2013. My, how far we've come, my friend.
That was virtual fitting before virtual fitting was cool.
Yes, sir. I remember doing that. We had a big event with THP, got on there, had a little chat with you. You seemed pretty satisfied with my decision to obsess over B330 at the time. However, I have transitioned. I don't know if you know this. I'm an RX guy now. It's a big deal.
Time and age catches up with everyone.
Well, me, it's spin. Spin catches up with me, but I've never hit the ball further. I am so incredibly fond of your product. I actually played your ball for the entirety of last year's posting season. I don't know that I've ever done that before.
That's cool. We appreciate it. I'll tell you what, that new RX. All kidding aside, that thing is a monster off the tee. It's it hits the ground, it rolls for miles.
The big seller for me was getting the spin conditioned a bit, and we did some video work on THP where we saw a significant change in the spin between RX to XS. And man, I'm so impressed with how much more I can control my play, especially in wind. That was always the biggest thing for me, because I'm coming in hot, like 40 plus degrees of descending angle. I don't have to worry too much about spin. So it's been like, and I'm sitting here fawning over your product, which is probably ridiculous, but yeah, it has been an absolute pleasure to put in the bag and kind of open the idea of what you guys have been talking about for years, that there is a perfect ball for everyone. It's not a perfect science, but you know, spend enough time looking for it and you can find the one that works well for your game. Are you an RX guy, or you play different?
I'm actually a yellow RX. Okay. As you might imagine, I'm playing with three other golfers that are also playing Bridgestone. So I play the yellow RX, quite honestly, because I'm too lazy to mark my ball. And I want to know which one is mine.
So you guys released the new E-Series this year. How's that going?
Oh, it's gangbusters. E12 Contact, you know, it has the visual technology. I actually have a dimple here. It has the visual technology to it of the raised intersection. And it's science that people, you can see it, feel it, touch it, believe it. It's not necessarily pixie dust on the inside. And that's really been going well with consumers. So it's been gangbusters. It's outpaced expectation, quite honestly. And we can't make them fast enough.
You know, so one thing you said, it's a visual technology. And if you're a golfer unfamiliar with the product, it's different than what we're used to seeing. The dimple profiles changed a bit. Like you said, there's little elements that almost, they almost look like imperfections until you find out there's actually a reason there for it. Which is cool because you obviously get to see a change from the previous iteration. And that, I mean, as a golfer, we need to see that, right? To say, oh, it's just the same thing. It's just the same thing. But in reality, you guys got a whole lot more going on with it.
Yeah. And, I, you know, when the R&D guy showed it to me a couple of years ago, I was looking at it saying, this is awesome, but what does it do? it's attention getting, and it does, you know, it does provoke thought, but does it actually perform? And so luckily it does, and it continues to. But at the end of the day, what the dimple is doing is it's creating more surface contact between the ball and the club. So you get more distance off the tee, better energy transfer through the cover into the core. And then on the flip side of that, with an iron or a wedge, there's obviously more raised areas for the grooves to bite in and impart spin and do their thing, so to speak. So you know, that's the cool thing about what we do here is, this is one of the reasons I love working here, quite honestly, is our balls are designed to help consumers. You know, obviously we got Tiger and Bryson, and they're great ambassadors of the brand. They're great from an R&D standpoint. But at the end of the day, when we tell a consumer either, you know, on the package or via a podcast like this, what the product's going to do, it actually performs like that on the course. And this is yet another example of it.
So you mentioned yellow. One of the big sticking points for me on products is the wear features over time. I know you guys do it a little bit differently, and I've been incredibly impressed over the last year with the cover quality and resilience on the Tour B. How important is that for you guys when you look at people trying to play your ball? Obviously, they don't want scuffs. They don't want marks or lines, anything like that over time on the ball. How important is that in the design process when you're looking at a product and taking it to market?
Oh, durability is a huge portion of what we do here. Because ultimately, if there's problems with clear coat breaking down, dimple mutilation, etc., it's going to affect the aerodynamics, going to affect the consistency. So when we are prototyping, designing new future state golf balls, 100% durability is one of the elements that we're looking at. You know, we've got 800 patents as it relates to the golf ball. So we don't necessarily tell the world about everything that we're putting into the ball. Saying too much is saying nothing. But the coating, especially on the Tour Bs, the clear coat that goes onto the golf ball, it actually has some durability properties in it. So a lot of the balls are just clear coated just for aesthetic reasons. But the Tour B clear coat specifically, it's a multi-part kind of hardener when the materials get added together to kind of harden and actually create an added layer of durability on that golf ball that protects the reactive cover. And an interesting story, because it wasn't one that I expected, quite honestly, because Bryson's known for he goes through golf balls somewhat regularly in terms of over the course of a round, he's switching them out. Not necessarily because of durability, but because he doesn't want to get to a position that he's having a durability problem. So he switches golf balls out a little bit, just kind of, you know, one of the quirky things he does. But the final round of the U.S. Open, actually, he played the same golf ball from the first drive to the last putt. So he played one golf ball for the final round on Sunday to win a major.
Really?
Yeah.
Did he give you a reason for it, or did he just leave you in suspense?
No, I mean, it was working for him. It was working. To your point, the ball is highly durable, so there was no need or no wear that he needed to switch it out. And I mean, at the way he's swinging right now, you know, he's swinging faster than anybody else out there. So I think that speaks to the durability of the ball a little bit.
So I've heard stories out there, and it's not specific to your brand, just balls in general, that pros can be so finicky on transitioning to new product. It could be something as simple as, I played two rounds, one with the old product, one with a new one, and the older product held dirt less than the new one. Is that, do you think that's realistic at all? Do you think that's pros being pros, or do you think there's a science to that?
I think there are nuanced things as it relates to let's call them turf conditions and weather. There are nuanced things that some of these guys are very in tune with. 100%. The best players in the world can see differences. Those differences aren't necessarily differences that you or I can see whatsoever. So they're not something that necessarily affects a consumer's decision in terms of product, but they are a consideration factor for some of the best players in the world. And that's something that we're fortunate here, is that we have a smaller team, in terms of the tour staff. So when we're talking about transitioning golf balls from one model to another, when we're talking about design of a golf ball, we look at Bryson and Tiger, for example. We look at them, sure, they're an endorser of the product, but really they're an extension of our R&D team. So things that you're talking about in terms of getting a player from the old product to the new product, that's not a hurdle that we necessarily have. I do understand it being a pain point if you've got a bunch of balls out there. But in our case, Tiger and Bryson are with us every step of the way when designing the golf ball, Freddie, Lexi, et cetera. But since they're with us as we design it, it's the opposite in the case of Bridgestone. They're chomping at the bit for us to put it on the USGA conform list sooner rather than later, so they can jump to that new ball they've been working on for a couple of years with us.
That's pretty cool. You don't have to give me a name or anything specific to that, but you have to have a couple stories or one story that kind of stands out to you from a pro who either had a good laugh at something they said, or the perspective they took, or just an experience. I mean, there's got to be something in your bank you can share with our listeners about your pros.
Yeah. I mean, they're all, at the end of the day, they're all just normal dudes like you and I, and, they'd be sitting right here having a fun conversation and cutting up just like we do. They all approach life. They approach fitting and testing. They all approach it completely differently, quite honestly. And so from a testing standpoint, obviously love working with Tiger. You're not going to lie there. But Bryson's probably my favorite guy that we work with, from the standpoint that Bryson's out there and Bryson's constantly looking to improve, right? So some of the guys, when we work with them there, it's a yes or a no. It either works or it doesn't work in terms of prototype golf balls or a new golf ball. What Bryson's doing is he's hitting a shot with the prototype and he says, that doesn't work now. However, if I change this to my shaft or change this to my swing, et cetera, then this golf ball could be the holy grail for me. So the calculation's constantly moving, and it's not just a yes or no on one piece of equipment. It's how can I get the total sum of my parts, the ball, the club head, the shaft, the swing, how can I get all of that to be perfect? And so it's fun working with Bryson from that standpoint. The other thing that I enjoy, and there's no particular single moment that stands out, but it's interesting behind closed doors, just the in-depth conversations that Tiger and Bryson have with each other, and the way that their brains are thinking and kind of analyze, approaches to the game, whether it's a mental approach, whether it's a difference in stance, whatever it might be. And how that there's a certain amount of respect between the two, quite honestly. And then they each kind of approach conversations with an open mind, not necessarily open to making the change that the other one's discussing, but just open to hearing the thought process and learning how the other one got to the place that they are.
So if you had to pick one guy between Bryson and Tiger who could figure out the finite difference in the smallest, most minuscule piece of a product, who'd you take?
It's gotta be Tiger. Tiger. He can tell us stuff about the golf ball above and beyond what the robot and the launch monitors can provide us. A great example, we'll be out there hitting chip shots. He'll just be warming up, and he'll know which ball is on the club face longer just by feel. And that's not something that you're not going to necessarily get that with like a normal Doppler radar or launch monitor. That's something that you need like a 30 frames per second high speed camera and takes half a day to set it up type thing. So the fact that he can provide us that feedback instantaneously, it's invaluable to our work and what we're doing.
So I want to circle back on Bryson a little bit, because in truth, the guy absolutely fascinates me. I like that he's not afraid to do it his own way. I think he's certainly pioneering a different way of looking at the game. And I think a lot of it's misunderstood. People have perspectives, and there's nothing wrong with that. The idea of mad scientist regularly comes out. I mean, he played it in a couple ads with you guys, which was very, very fun between him and Tiger. Is there a way you can paint that for people meeting him, knowing him a little bit, that sort of helps them come to a better conclusion as to the type of person he is?
Yeah, I mean, it's honestly it's who Bridgestone is as a company. It's who, to a certain degree, I try to be as a person. It's the constant drive to improve is what it is. But at the same time, knowing you're not going to be the best overnight, that it takes time to get there. It takes time to get the equation right. It takes time to have all the dominoes fall into place, so to speak. I think one of the things for me that kind of sums up Bryson best is actually something that Tiger once said, which was, there's something that Bryson's doing today that's going to be, that people think is different, but it'll be commonplace in the game 30 years from now. And don't know necessarily what that'll be, but that's what the greatest player of all time thinks of Bryson. And I think he's probably pretty right about that. I mean, you look at what Bryson's doing with, you know, with the chase of distance, we'll call it, in terms of what he's doing on an equipment side, but definitely on bulking up, what he's doing with his physique, and then as well as the swing. And at first, you know, it's something that seemed, you know, kind of unorthodox, if you will. But then take a look at the PGA Tour, and you've got established players like Rory McIlroy chasing distance. You know, you got other players out there putting 47, 48-inch drivers in play at the November Masters, trying to chase down Bryson. So regardless of what the perception is, the greatest players in the world are trying to keep up with him.
That's such a fun – that's more or less how I see it going down. You know, we've seen players who are spectacular at one aspect of the game, and when it comes to distance, there's a short list of guys who you watch them hit, and you know it's just – it's what they've known for a very long time. And it's not that Bryson was a short hitter. I think it was his understanding that the further out you could get and the more accurate you could be with it, the better chance you have of winning. And I mean, it's not wrong. We all play golf. We know what it's like to hit a bad drive versus a great drive. Which one's going to score better? But for him to make this significant change, I think is the most fascinating part about it, because he's not afraid to take that chance. Whereas I think a lot of guys out there who are making money playing this game, and there's no way they're going to go out of their own bubble to try and achieve what he did. And then he won a major, and people are like, oh, okay, I guess, you know, there's some merit to this process. And as much as it's still a bit of a fearful thing, I think based on the reactions they had at Bay Hill, the crowd getting behind him, which was super, super cool on the par five, you can tell people are warming up to the idea that Bryson is not only going to be around for a while, he's going to be pretty relevant, which is fun, man. I think it's fun.
Yeah, I think it's awesome. He, you know, what's interesting is it, he approached the whole distance thing in a totally calculated way. It wasn't just, let me see how far I can hit the ball. I can't get into all of it just because of some of the confidential conversations we have, but he spent a lot of time understanding the positions on the course that distance would put him in terms of, you know, what kind of soil condition, what kind of turf condition he potentially could end up in, as well as what kind of yardages and what the approach shots from those yardages might potentially look like. So he studied numerous different angles. Basically, while it's a distance conversation, to a certain degree, he studied from the pin back to the tee to fully understand the implications of what he is doing. And so that's just another little insight into the way that he thinks. You know, it's not me going out there on Saturday trying to hit the ball as far as I can and then figuring out what happens next after that. It's a wholehearted calculation that went into this.
I'm going to take us in a totally different direction. You good with it?
Let's make a turn.
All right. So there's a food truck coming to my neighborhood tonight. Tacos, taco truck. Not quite to the level that I hear you're very knowledgeable in, but just food trucks, food in general, barbecue. What is your world like as it relates to being a foodie?
So I've competed in, JB probably told you this, I've competed in 160 professional barbecue competitions.
Only 160, eh?
That's not even only 160.
That's not even my driver ball speed.
Yeah, so wow. we've had we've had fun with it. We've won some state championships. Won a U.S. championship in brisket a number of years ago. My barbecue sauce has won world champion twice, so it's rather accomplished in the little bit of time that we do it on the side.
It's funny when you said JB egged me on or whatever you mentioned. He called it, some of the awards you've won, the Masters of Barbecue competitions, sauce competitions, is what your achievements are in. So I think you're downplaying a little bit. What is that like, and what kind of got you started into chasing the perfect sauce or the perfect brisket, that kind of thing?
So we started doing them as a family. My dad and my uncle were out there, and then it kind of evolved, or they got older and weren't doing it as much, but I still kind of had a love for it. But it's, quite honestly, it's to a certain degree, there was a time where we were kind of like the Bryson of barbecue, if you would. We had spreadsheets and Excel files that you're cooking a brisket for 12 hours, and every 15 minutes we tracked the temperature of the grill, the temperature of the meat, exactly what we were doing, if we were spritzing the meat with liquid, if we were wrapping in foil, whatever we're doing. And so for years we tracked all that, and it just at a certain point just kind of became second nature to what we were doing. But the competition that JB was referencing, it's called the Memphis in May, and it's the Super Bowl of Swine. It's a pork barbecue competition in Memphis, Tennessee. And the easiest way to understand what this contest is, if I want to paint a picture for you, is it's the intensity of Iron Chef meets the fun, happy-go-lucky attitude of Mardi Gras.
Okay.
So somewhere in between there is what Memphis in May is. It's a lot of people that love to cook and are really good at it, and it's a lot of people that love to enjoy life at the same time, all in one park on the river in May down in Memphis. And it's an interesting world, because when I go to the barbecue competitions, everyone wants to talk about golf, and then in the golf world, everyone wants to ask me about barbecue. So I'm never without a conversation topic.
So when you guys have cookouts at Bridgestone HQ, is it like the greatest thing ever for everyone but you? Is it expected that Elliot's bringing the meat, or what?
It's expected. It doesn't happen as often as you think, but there is an expectation. And then as we get new people hired on, it's the constant questioning and anticipation of when they're going to get to try my food.
Well, you've elevated the food talk on here. I believe I've already discussed the difference between Canadian barbecue and American barbecue at McDonald's. So I think we've stepped up a little bit in barbecue sauce quality on Off Course, which is great. What style is your sauce traditionally? What would you say?
It's so I'm originally from St. Louis. They consume more barbecue sauce per capita than anywhere in the world. So it's a lot of sauce usage, but it's a St. Louis style sauce. And the reason I share they consume so much sauce is because it's such a balanced sauce style in St. Louis. So there's some sweetness up front, then some savory notes in the middle, a little bit of black pepper on the backside. I'll give you and the listeners an at-home tip, if you will. I'm a big believer in flavor not coming from one ingredient. So like on a sweetness side, for example, you know, if you're just putting brown sugar in there, you're going to taste brown sugar, right? You're not going to taste kind of a complexity of flavors. So, you know, whenever I'm doing something sweet, something spicy, you know, it's brown sugar, it's honey, it's raw sugar, whatever it might be. It's a blend of those as opposed to just one ingredient. And the same thing on the heat side. It's not just pepper and chili powder and paprika. It's numerous spices to kind of create a more robust profile.
Kind of like your golf balls, I will leave you to the intermixings of a brilliant barbecue sauce. It's an incredible story. It's super fun. Are you doing it this year? Is it available this year to do?
It is available. It's very limited in terms of what's happening, because you have, you know, obviously in a COVID situation that there's complexity already, but then the competition that I do, the Memphis May competition, the judges actually travel from booth to booth to taste the barbecue. So there's a whole nother level of safety, if you will, there involved. So they are having the competition. It's much smaller than it typically would be. So I won't be attending this year, but that's still a passion point of mine, and we'll get back out there someday.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'll drive down there. You can cook for me, and I'll judge you relatively lightly because I have no idea what it means to have a good barbecue. So if you had to pick one meat, like the meat, if you wanted to showcase your skills, someone comes over, what's it going to be and why is it that particular style?
It'll be a pork rib. A lot of people call them baby back ribs. Technically they're loin ribs. So it'd be a loin rib. It basically would be smoked for 3 hours with the curved side up, spritzed with a little bit of agave and apple juice. We'd put a nice sheen on them, wrap them in foil, flip them over, let them braise for an hour and a half. And then I call it my signature technique, but other people do it. When I pull it out of the foil, I brush on the barbecue sauce lightly, and I do what I call set the sauce. So I set the sauce so that it's sticky enough that you know something was put on there, but not dripping so much that it gets on your clothes.
Well, that's my kind of rib. I really regret doing this discussion in the late afternoon because now I'm absolutely starving. That food truck has got a lot to live up to at this point, but it's cool, man. I love that you could share that with us and sort of the inner workings of Elliot's brain as we make our way back into golf for a bit. So I am going to take us back there because we that was a solid off course moment for us. I wanted to talk a little bit about the change from Bridgestone to the B on the ball. I know for some, they may think, you know, that's such a silly little nothing change. I remember putting you and Rayberg on blast at, I think, one of the PGA shows when you were making the change, saying, I'm buying so many of the old products. I do not want to be on my ball. It is ridiculous that you would do that. And then, of course, within a year, I'm, you know, extremely happy to have it on there. Was that a tough decision for your group to make to change that? Because you don't see a lot of change in the ball profiles, especially not from a logo standpoint.
Yeah, that's an interesting discussion. You know, we flash back, I've had to guess 2016-ish is when we did that.
That's right.
It was a conversation that we had had internally and had been working towards for a couple years. We made up a bunch of different sizes of bees. We tested them with giving them to some of our tour players to look at the size and play practice rounds, tested them with consumers. And ultimately what finally kind of got us there, and Rayberg and I have been advocates of the bee since before the thought even existed, quite honestly. But what got us to that place is when we started signing players that didn't have the B on their clothing or on the bag. So the first player being Bryson DeChambeau, right after the 2016 Masters, the RBC event, he put our golf ball in play. And so with the traditional Bridgestone, it would have been very difficult for us to relay to consumers that Bryson's playing our golf ball. So by having that big B on there, it shows up nice on television. It's good branding for us. It's also at this point now that Nike's left the golf ball space, we're kind of the only brand that has just a logo instead of their name written out, which is a you know, kind of a fun little thing.
So you mentioned Bryson putting it in play, and he's obviously been at the top of the leaderboard quite a bit lately. There can't be anything more pleasing for you than on Sunday afternoon having that mega zoom coming with the camera. Like, I cannot wait for Bryson to hit this putt because you just see B, B, B. Be end over end as it goes towards the hole. I mean, what a cool thing. Like, back in the day, I was super greedy saying leave the giant Bridgestone on there, but to your point, it's not gaudy. It's a nice size, and I mean, it's so visible on TV now. I think it's a great change, as much as I hate change.
Well, thank you. Yeah, it works out good. And you know, like when they're winning the tournaments and we're thinking about making a commercial, that's what we're looking for. As we're watching on Sunday, we're jotting down notes of when's a good 5 seconds of footage to steal for that bee rolling into the hole for that iconic moment.
So speaking of Tour B, are we going to see a new product coming up soon?
Depends on how you define the word soon. We have actively been working on Tour. We never stop, as you might imagine. So we've actively been working on Tour B since before the current one launched, quite honestly. And, you know, we're in the kind of the final push of prototyping right now. There's many iterations as we go through. Some of them are to test technology. Some of them are to test fully constructed final spec of golf ball. So we're at that final spec phase, and we've gotten over the finish line with some of the models, and we're getting there with some of the others. And, yeah, I mean, don't hold me to it, but we'll have something fun to show you at the PGA Show next year.
All right. That's what we're talking about. Is it weird for you guys going from really getting the hype going on a product like the E-Series and then bouncing back over to Tour B and kind of playing volleyball there or ping pong there? Or is it easier because they're such a unique product against each other?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're two different audiences. They're two different constructions. They're, quite honestly, they're advertised and messaged two different people and in two different ways. So it's not that terribly difficult to cross over. And you know, just to give you a little insight into the business, we're getting to a point where Adam's a little bit more of kind of the inline current product, and you hear him out there on social and an email with that. And I'm a little more behind the scenes working on future state stuff. So while there definitely is crossover and, you know, we're talking about the same product at the same time, to a certain degree, I'm helping get it ready for market and helping launch it. And then after kind of that initial, you know, push around the launch, then it's Adam's baby to nurture and take care of for me.
You know, that's funny you say that, Elliot, talking about future products coming out. And I've heard a couple rumblings on the internet saying Bridgestone clubs could be a thing again in a big way. So let's do the world premiere. What's coming?
You're trying to put me on the spot here. I'm not going to say anything I'm not allowed to say. Let's put it that way. We've had a very, very good forged iron business. It's been kind of our bread and butter, high quality Japanese forgings. I'm not going to speak out of turn for Zach. I know he continues to push behind the scenes in terms of what the future looks like for us there. With the pandemic last year, we put clubs kind of on pause, just not knowing how we were going to source materials, et cetera, what that was going to look like. And so we look to the future, but I have nothing to share on that front any further.
But my defense, everyone, I did try. It's a conversation we've had before, Elliot. I mean, I've been incredibly fond of the clubs you guys put out, even back to J33, which was like my first genuinely nice set of irons, which were spectacular, by the way, all the way up into J40, J15. I mean, you guys have, it seems like when you do release clubs, you do it in the right way, in a way that supports golfers of different levels of handicap. And I dig that. I'm looking forward to seeing what's coming. Obviously.
Yeah, I mean, I think you hit the nail on the head. We, on the club side, we're not driving product launches dictated on a calendar. We're driving it dictated on when the appropriate innovations are ready for the U.S. market.
Well, if you want to re-release J15 wedges, that'd be totally fine. I like the black finish, 50, 54, 58, not being specific or anything like that. But, you know, definitely didn't play those for way too long. It's fine. We can move on. We'll go. You know, I want to talk a little bit about Freddie, and we just finished watching Sawgrass last week. I don't know if you're familiar. I would imagine you are. He had one of the most impressive threes I've ever seen on the 17th there many, many years ago. It's actually one of my main memories of watching golf with my dad back in the day when he just dunked it. It was the coolest thing I'd ever seen at that time. What's Freddie meant to the brand, and do you have a good story to tell about him?
Well, you know, Freddie's been here. He's been here since the beginning. You know, he helped launch the Bridgestone brand. You know, one of the original slogans of Bridgestone was Boom Boom, named after Freddie. So he's been with us the whole time. It's been a great relationship. He is, he's still, you know, he keeps trucking along. Probably just from a, how do I word this? From a popularity standpoint, he's still one of the most engaging people we have when we post videos of him and stuff. The consumer loves him. The golfer still loves him. We still love him here. So even though he may not be, you know, playing as many tournaments or as visible as he once was, he's still very valuable to Bridgestone. We appreciate the relationship with him. The last couple of years have been kind of fun, kind of different with Freddie. For years, we asked Freddie if he would play a yellow golf ball, specifically because we wanted to establish that he was playing a Bridgestone. Because that, if you go back a handful of years, we were one of the few yellow tour balls out there, and we wanted to establish Freddie's playing Bridgestone. You know, could play a yellow ball for us, Fred. And Freddie's very traditional; wouldn't touch a yellow golf ball. And then fast forward to a couple of years ago, we now have the Bridgestone senior players. so the Senior Players Championship, which is one of the majors on the Champions Tour, since they don't have the Masters. They got to fill in some holes there with majors. And so we're at the Bridgestone Senior Players, and we got the tour truck there. And Freddie says, you know what? It's your tournament. I'm your guy. I'm going to finally play that yellow ball you've been asking me about. So Freddie plays the yellow ball at the Senior Players. And we thought it was like a one-week thing. Next thing you know, he's playing the yellow ball all the time. Fast forward to today, Freddie's playing yellow RXS now. So he did switch to the lower compression model. So Freddie's playing yellow RXS now, and it's gotten to the point where Freddie not only wants to continue playing yellow balls, Freddie wants yellow prototypes.
Oh.
He says he puts the white ball down. He can't even, you know, just, I can't even hit this. I need the yellow ball. So he's really done a 180 on yellow, and really that's one of my fun Freddie stories, because he's a creature of habit in many ways. So the fact that he did a complete 180 from not wanting to look at a yellow golf ball to now not being able to look at a white golf ball is kind of fun.
You know, I was about to use that same phrase, that golfers are inherently creatures of habit. And I can definitely relate to that. What I remember is that when you released Tour B, this version of Freddie actually made the transition into this ball into RXS. And that was a big story for you guys. I think that's very telling for a lot of golfers out there who maybe are chasing a little bit of speed and don't have what they might have had previously. You get the performance of a tour level golf ball and a compression that really works for your game. I think having Freddie's stamp of approval there has to be not just great for you guys, but also very rewarding based on the story you've told over the last few years.
Yeah, it has been in many fronts. You know, Freddie is a he's old school. He's a field player, very much so. When he's on a launch monitor, he doesn't want to know the numbers. He has no desire to know what his numbers are. So it's interesting. I think Rayberg and I are the only people that know Freddie's launch conditions, at least in the last 15 years. So we got Freddie's launch conditions. And it's interesting. We explained RXS, et cetera. And there's some videos out there floating around with Freddie telling his version of the story. But he basically, from what we gather, he kind of called Tiger to fact check us. And he said, this is what Bridgestone's telling me. And Tiger said, dude, they're right. You can't play my ball. And so Freddie made the switch.
I bet that was a hell of a conversation to be a part of.
To be a fly on the wall.
Oh my goodness. That is fantastic. It's perfect. I mean, you have a guy like Tiger talking to a guy like Freddie, and they're both incredible swings, incredible skill sets on their own right, kind of shooting the lack of better term, shooting the shit with each other. No different than Tiger and Bryson probably having a go. I mean, what a cool group of guys you have going with your product right now. And you know me, man, I'm hugely supportive of the brand and what you guys are doing. I'm super excited to see what the next version of Tour B is, because, you know, obviously I'm into it. So
yeah, we're excited about the tech that we have. You know, we've been prototyping it, and it's it's the next step forward for it in a big way. So we're excited to finalize a couple of the balls that have been finalized, and to get to Orlando for an in-person PGA show next year, hopefully.
Yeah, it's been a while. It's been a minute. This is the part of the show that I either dread or love, Elliot. The last couple minutes, I let my guest ask me any questions they might have. Do you have anything set and ready to go?
Well, I'm a little caught off guard here. I'm yeah, usually on the other end of this.
That's the idea.
I'm usually on the other side of this. Yeah. So what are you ordering off the taco truck tonight?
Oh, man. Maybe I'll ask you, since you seem to know a heck of a lot more than I do. They have fish, they have shrimp, they have chicken, they have steak.
All right, so you got options there.
I do.
I'm honestly, if it's like a street taco, I usually get as many flavors as possible, because it's only like a 2-3 bite thing usually. So I usually get a couple tacos, and I love the little sauces that go on them, the chipotles and the...
Yep. The aiolis, I think they're called.
What is it?
The aiolis. So I'm getting Rainbow Road with aioli on top. Perfect.
There you go.
Awesome. Anything else or anything you want to say about the brand leading forward? Share with our listeners.
No, we appreciate all the support out there, and we know golf's been hot lately, and we're in the same boat as everyone. I'm out there trying to get a tee time just like all you guys. I know it's busy, and thanks for the support of Bridgestone. And you know, as Dan opened the show up, find us out there in the Twitter world and talk to us, and we'll be happy to chat with you.
Awesome. Hey, good luck in your tournament this weekend. I'm sure you're going to dominate based on the amount of play you put in already. I can't wait to hear how it goes.
I'm texting with the tournament organizer, figuring out how many mulligans I can get.
Oh yeah, there it is. Well, I hope everyone enjoyed the show. And if you are playing golf this weekend, have a great time, play well, and let me know how you did on Twitter. Talk soon.
THP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network, your number one source for all things golf. Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.